Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Well, that was fun. I've just literally ran through all those prelims with no Mark. Thank you very much, Matt, there in the chat. I'm going to go through those prelims again. What, you can tell I've done this for a while. Carlos been back throwing me off.
Well, at least a minute in.
two and a half. But Mark and Andre Barrio got the decision against Dalcha Lungiambula. Julian Erosa got the third round sub against Charles Jourdain. Jack Shaw picked up the third round decision against Ludwig Shalnian. And then Molly McCann got the third round decision against Jian Young Kim. So getting back to the main event, Carlton, it's a fight we've been waiting for, since 2016. Paddy Pimblett finally making his UFC debut after turning down offers a couple of times and then having issues with visas. He's finally made his debut, and what a bloody debut it was. Thanks again, Matt, for that assistance there. Good save in the clutch, and I'll speak to you tomorrow. Paddy Carlos started really fresh, very confident, sticking his chin out, hands down low, landing big shots. And then there was a little bit of a worry, weren't there? There was a part where Luigi Vandramina lands a big shot, gets the fight to the ground, and we see Paddy kind of shook a little bit, but he gets back up. Still the same Paddy, though. Still the same kind of confidence. Still gets tagged a couple more times, but he ends up essentially just destroying Vandramina on the feet. Takes a few leg kicks for his trouble, but lands a massive flurry of punches. Goes for the single. He's unable to get it, but he chases down Luigi. Lands some big shots, swarms, flurry, and we see a collapse. And Paddy Pimblett, the Paddy the Baddy, finally makes his UFC debut and finally gets that UFC win. What did you think of Paddy's debut?
You don't knock scouters out, to an extent.
Unless you're Darren Till.
Yeah. We'll get to that. But you just got to shout out to Next Generation in Liverpool. Now, the good thing about this part in particular, Paddy Pimblett, I knew at some point he was going to be in the UFC. He, like you referred to, he got offered in 2016 and then 2018, so on and so on. He knew he wasn't ready. He knew it wasn't his time. He bided his time in Cage Warriors. Money was never an issue for him. Cage Warriors was paying him really well. He had really good sponsors. Mm-hmm. So we had no issue with the money side on that sort of things, where a lot of fighters have that issue. He didn't have to worry about it. But not only that, he was able to grow as an actual fighter, not just actually his skill set. That's why he wasn't ready in the UFC, but grow as a fighter. Yeah. If you were to watch his interviews going all the way along for the last 4 or 5 years, you'll hear him when he was talking about when he was younger and he was this massive star in Liverpool. He's even bigger now throughout the world. So you can just imagine if he was acting like he was 6 years ago, he'd be out. Let's put it this way. If he reacted this way 6 years ago, he'd probably be all over Las Vegas now getting absolutely wrecked. But he's grown up, and that's what he wanted to. He wanted to actually grow up before getting into the UFC, because he knows that the UFC is the biggest gate in the world for mixed martial arts. So he did it the clever way, and he did it the right way, in my opinion. But the good thing is, I did an interview with Chris Price. You can go check it out on the channel, on Radio Techers YouTube channel. Chris Price, he trains at Next Generation for sparring, and one of his sparring partners is Paddy Pimblett. So he's got great insight to how Paddy thinks, how Paddy actually farts, how Paddy spars, just doing the day-to-day stuff. And his opinion on him is a class down-to-earth guy. He'll help you out when you need it. He'll basically make you a better fighter. If you're in his presence, he'll push you through your paces and make you understand what you can do as an athlete. And according to Chris, with Paddy Pimlott being an absolute submission expert, and he is. You can just go back and watch his victories in Cage Warriors and everything he did, from flying triangles to arm bars to omoplatas. He can do anything. And now with the strength and conditioning that he's on, he's an absolute powerhouse. I think his last fight in Cage Warriors was a TKO KO.
Yeah.
And coming into this one, predicting the first round, getting the first round, and just absolutely wiping the floor. And how can you not love him? He's Paddy the... He's got the haircut that everyone, every 14 to 16 year old lad in Liverpool wants. And
he's even trimmed it a little bit.
Yeah, he's trimmed it a little bit. I don't know why. Well, that needs to grow back out. Don't do that again, Paddy. That's stupid. But yeah, he's got the personality. He can speak, he can sell. And to be honest with you, at this point, he is the Liverpool's version of Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. He's got everything that I'm a promoter's wet dream. And that's what he said when they were interviewing him. And he is. People would be dripping over him. It's just that actually sign him. And because the UFC have got him, and not only can he fight, he can sell a fight. He looks good all round. Paddy the Pimlott. Just remember the name.
Yeah, it's not often that UFC come calling more than once, and when you turn them down, even if you say I don't feel I'm ready, it's very rare that they come calling. So it's obviously they knew there was a talent there, and yeah, I think this was the perfect time for him to come in. Like I said, he's matured. He's not the kind of like brash young kid he was a few years ago. Now he's a more well-rounded fighter. He needs to start putting those hands up a little bit more, though, protecting that chin, because it's a big step up going from Cage Warriors to UFC. So let's see where he goes, and that's a great fight to start your UFC career off with.
Well, it is a great fight, but he has got an absolute brilliant chin, and it seems like everyone from Next Generation. And I just want to speak about Molly McCann. I don't want to like jump away and not give her any credit. She was an absolute beast in that fight. You could hit her with a sledgehammer. That motherfucker weren't going down. She were walking forward.
Well, she got headbutted, and that
pissed her off.
Yeah.
Like, she put it on her own Instagram, Molly 2.0, and I absolutely fucking love this version. Mm-hmm. She's an absolute killer. If I got the opportunity to train with Molly and Paddy, fucking hell, I'd be happy. I'd be fucking well happy. Them two are absolutely on fire. Mm-hmm. And give her a chance. Don't have her fighting on prelims again, because she's a fucking killer. She sells tickets, and she will sell farts. Put her in co-main events to main events. Her and Paddy Pimlott again on the same card. Paddy, obviously, it's going to sound like a bit shit because Molly has been in the UFC longer, but fortunately, that's the way the marketing goes. Paddy in the main event and her in the co-main event, and that's going to fucking sell.
It definitely sells, and bigging up the northwest of England.
That's it. Get it in fucking Anfield.
Represent.
Get it in Anfield. Simple as that. Yeah, there's no noise restriction. Fuck. I know that. Conor McGregor wants fucking, is it Croker Park? Croker Park. But there's a noise limit there. They don't like fucking noise. Fuck that. Liverpool don't give a shit about noise. Simple. Go to Liverpool, go to Anfield, sell that motherfucker out. People will be happy. Everyone will come. There'll be queues outside the door. There'll be people trying to climb on roof just to fucking watch it in Octagon. Seriously.
So let's just calm it down a little bit and go with Modestas Bukauskas versus Khalil Roundtree Jr. in the light heavyweight division. And what a great fight for Khalil. Really kind of showed his class in this. Damaged Bukauskas almost straight away, broke his nose. You could see that Bukauskas just didn't deserve to be, or didn't belong in the same octagon as Khalil Roundtree, just landing shot after shot on his nose, absolutely just destroyed his face, ended up basically being a full round of him, just getting absolutely pasted in the face. We saw Khalil kind of calm down when he saw maybe that the knockout wasn't coming too quickly, but all the way through this first round, it was pretty much all Bukauskas, and I think they showed that he landed one significant strike in the whole fight, which is absolutely ridiculous. Coming out for the second, Bakorkas, that's when he lands his one significant strike. That kind of angered Khalil Rountree, who cracks him with a right, landed some more shots, and then went for the oblique kick, which just missed. Then followed it up with another one pretty much 8 seconds later. And you could just see the knee just give way, the leg collapse. It essentially bent in half, and we get the very rare TKO leg kick finish from Khalil Rountree.
The horrible part about that injury, like, and I'm not glad that I called it. I'm just happy. The fact is that I'm actually learning shit from you. When that happened, I fucking cringed, and I instantly straight away. I'm like, that's his MCL and his LCL just absolutely gone. I didn't say the PCL, I'll give it that. But when they were on about the doctor, the physician basically saying the same thing, I'm like, yes, I got that right. But shit, I do feel sorry for him because
saw his knee crumble.
Yeah, the move's legal. It's absolutely legal. You can do it. Is it horrible? Yes, it fucking is. It's disgusting. You seen what happened. Fair enough, he could take a crack and his nose were broken. He's going to need some sort of surgery to put that back in place. But it were inevitable. He's lucky enough that his knee got blew out. I'd rather have a blown out knee than somewhat brain damage. Because he was taking a lot of shots from Khalil Rountree. And Khalil Rountree, it's like a fucking truck. Mm-hmm. You do not stand in front of him like he were doing. And if you are going to stand in front of him, you let that jab fucking fly. You're simple as you try and back him up again, but he wasn't doing anything. Rountree was able to get the leg kicks off, and just that the left hook and that right hand were just absolutely vicious. Every time he hit him, it seemed to stun him. I don't say hurt him because he didn't really do something that I thought, you know what, it's going to knock him down. But this, to me, in my opinion, this fight, yeah, even though it was a decent fight and a good performance for Khalil Rountree, it doesn't do, in my opinion, nothing for him because in the light heavyweight division, I think you go back in his last six fights, it's win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. Yeah. So it's up, down, up, down, up, down. So it does absolutely nothing. Promotion-wise, yeah, it looked good. He's a big guy, he's got muscle, he kicks hard and he hits hard. That's fair enough. But if you're not good enough to get the finishes it's bad because he got the finish. He got the finish with the oblique kick. So what I'm saying is going to sound, it does sound stupid, so I don't know why I'm going to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you're not getting the finishes consistently and you're going up and down, up and down, up and down, if it doesn't do nothing in your career for the UFC, you just end up becoming the next gatekeeper, the next journeyman. And in the light heavyweight division, there's a lot of contenders in there who will train a lot harder than you and try and keep it consistent. They're the ones that will get up into the top five, the top threes, title contenders, world championship. If you keep going up and down, up and down, up and down, you'll just get looked at as the next cowboy, as the next Kelvin Gastelum. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the last thing you want, because I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know how old he is, but I'm pretty sure he's a little bit older than 30. He's coming around.
He's been in the UFC for quite a while. I think this was his, like, maybe his 10th fight, and this win actually makes him 5-5. So it just shows how much he has bounced around with wins and losses.
Yeah, so I don't want to shit on him. It was a good performance, what he did. Great performance. Could you, after watching thousands and thousands and thousands of fights, I can honestly say I've seen better performances in the way that this turned out. Yeah, fair enough.
The finish is memorable.
Yeah, his finish is definitely memorable, but his opponent absorbed so much damage from where the ordinary person, if Khalil Rountree hit you like that, you're probably going to be out. But his opponent somewhat made his punches look a bit softer. When they're not, it was just somewhat like one of the performances where it's like, Jesus, his opponent can take a whack, but Khalil Rountree does hit hard. He hits hard, and they should have done a hell of a lot more damage, but the fact is that they didn't says that he needs to do something about his performance. The kick were absolutely fucking vicious. You can't take that away from him. He won the fight, but again, it doesn't put him anywhere forward. It doesn't move him anywhere. Yeah. He just puts him onto the next guy that the UFC go, right, you're free. Yeah,
who's he losing
this
to
guy's
next?
Free.
Who's he losing to next? Who's he winning next?
Sort of thing.
It's that kind of like a seesaw.
Well, that's it. Well, if you go into you looking at it in the bookies perspective now, you go into the bookies now for his next fight, odds are he's probably going to be the underdog because they're going to go off his record. They'd be like, oh, win-loss. He won his last fight.
Every time he steps up, he gets knocked back down to outside the top 15.
Well, that's it, because if you look at it, like, he's lost to some guys who aren't in the top, like, 10, but then when he gets into the top 10 guys, the top 5 guys, they're the guys he loses to. Because I think his last top contender was, Melvin Finger, Italian one, fucking Shrek.
Vittori.
Melvin Vittori.
Marvin.
Marvin Vittori. Fucking. Ah, it's calling Shrek. Oh, yeah. I think that was the last top contender he fought. And even then, he lost.
Yeah. So then, for us Brits, this was probably the piss-break match, but it ended up actually being a fairly decent match.
Yeah.
Alex Morono versus David Zawada, and this was three rounds of two fighters essentially trying to punch the living piss out of each other, which is all well and good for me in the UFC. For me, I think Morono edged it throughout every single round, so when the judges give it three rounds to zero to him, I can understand why. I think he ended up making Zawada bleed in the later rounds. Zawada did get his own work in. He tended to kind of start slowly, take a lot of damage. And then kind of like kicking with the last minute to go. I mean, the first round he basically got slapped about. Then with about a minute to go, started to really land his own shots and get his own kicks in. Same with the second round. That's when he got bloodied up. Morono was landing big shots. Zawada just eating him. Then about 30 seconds to go, started to picking up the pace and landing his own shots. And yet again, in the third round, he attempted to get it more to the ground in the third round, which was interesting. I mean, he should have really started doing that at the first round when it was getting absolutely demolished. He got a little bit of a decent groundwork in the third, but just too little too late. Morono ends up going for a choke. We get back to the feet. The refs give all three rounds to Morono, and I think that's a fair result. I don't think David Zawada was particularly bad.
I don't think it's a fair result fucking rescuing all three rounds.
No, I mean, the judges. but I don't think Zawada had a bad performance. He was just bettered in every single facet of striking by Alex Morono.
Oh, that's it. I think
Jason Herzog going, nah, we don't need to take this to the judges. You got your ass whipped.
Yeah, well, that's it. David did. I think David's problem is when I was watching that fight, the only thing that sort of stood out to me is, fuck, and he sort of got like an old school way of mixed martial arts where it's just walk down, take a punch and just try and punch fucking hard. And not really move his head as much. I only really seen him start to move his head properly, if you could say that, about into the minute, like into the second round. But other than that, he was just eating him. You could tell they were hurting him, even though he was going forward. That's the sort of like old school. It doesn't matter if it hurts you or whatever. He's going to hit you. You just might as well try and fucking hit him back. Morono was Alex was. Somewhat the fade. I'd like to say the fade of Emelianenko. Now, if people understand what I mean by that, if you don't, I'll just quickly explain it. Fade of Emelianenko was always had the sort of physique where it was like, you don't look like a fighter, but then he beat the pit out of everybody. And that's the sort of physique that Alex has to me. He's got that bit of like chub on the gut and stuff like that. He's not really the muscliest guy, but his technique, his skill comes before anything else. And that's what won that fight. The things that a lot of people can take away from him, especially not just a life lesson, but a fighter's lesson. The fact is that he took this fight on short notice. He come in and put on a performance that that David wasn't probably expecting, because he's also He's also known, Alex, as a grappler himself, as a somewhat Brazilian jiu-jitsu wrestler guy. Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, he started to come into the striking. So that's when you become a dangerous mixed martial artist, because then your opponent's always guessing what you're going to do. You're going to come in, you're going to strike, or you're going to wrestle, you're going to try out for submissions, or you're going to clinch. What's the game plan? So you're always getting, if you've only got one sort of skill set, it's easy for a team and a fighter to somewhat read you and study you. But when you're a complete all-round mixed martial artist and a teacher yourself, that's when you become tricky, because if you see his post fight interview, he's a black belt himself. He's got other people fighting in different organisations. Tomorrow, literally, as he's finishing he's got to go to Houston. Yeah.
In the post fight, he hasn't been able to really concentrate on himself for this camp, because he's got so much going on. His head coach is on Dana White's Contender Series tomorrow.
In Houston.
Yeah, so he's basically all over the place for the next week or so.
Well, that's it. So that's the one thing I can somewhat take away from this fight. The fact is that he's just an all-round mixed martial artist, whether that be fighter and coach. He's there for his, you can clearly tell he's there for his guys. So if you're in his gym, you've clearly got the perfect coach there. He's, for God's sake, he took a fight on short notice and didn't really put much attention into himself, which is, it's somewhat crazy if you ask me. You're going into a UFC fight and you're not really, you're putting more attention into your own athletes and your more fighters. That just fucking says what commitment that Alex has got there. What a top coach. Just nothing but respect.
So then into the co-main event, and another Northwest fighter, Big Tom Aspinall in the heavyweight division.
Getting some.
From Team Caravan.
Giving him a shout out. He's a massive cider drinker.
And he was taking on Sergey Spivak, he's had a pretty good run recently in the UFC. He picked off some big fighters, but this was Tom Aspinall's day. Pretty much straight away lands a big right hand. We see Spivak trying to be lateral with his movement. But Aspinall lands an uppercut. Spivak panics, goes for the level change to go for the takedown, but Aspinall sprawls, lands another big elbow, drops Spivak, and you can see the blood just piss from his face. Mm. Aspinall just gets on top, ground and pound, fight over, 2:13, a massive, massive victory for Tom Aspinall. Someone who I really have a lot of respect for, not only because he's from our neck of the woods, but more the way he approaches his UFC career. Instead of getting a couple of wins and then thinking, I'm the shit, I want to take on the big guys on the top five, he has been in the UFC now for 4 fights and he wants to build up slowly. So he's now ranked 12th. He wants the 11th one. He doesn't want to go, oh, well, I deserve top five. The way he's approached it, I really respect it, that he doesn't automatically think, oh, my shit don't stink. He knows he's got stuff to improve. He wants to climb that ladder slowly and surely to make sure he's got a real footing rather than being kind of a flash in the pan. But great victory for him, and just demolished Sergey Spivak.
Definitely. Just quickly pull up who's ranked 6th and 7th in the UFC division, heavyweight division. Tom Aspinall, that performance was absolutely class. Now, again, he's another all-round mixed martial artist, a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He knows how to fight off the back. He knows how to defend. He's brilliant. In the heavyweight division, like Daniel Cormier, I think you're explaining. I don't really listen to the commentators in these sort of fights. I like to watch it myself, but I think he was saying something about wrestling in the higher weights. Obviously, it takes a lot more out of you. It does. You're basically fucking wrestling with a 240, 250, 260-pound fucking punching bag. So it's going to take a lot more energy out of you. And with Tom Aspinall being able to work on his stand-up over the last couple of years, and like you said, with his slow start in the UFC, he got signed in 2019, and making his slow build-up, he's only young, I think he's 25, 26.
Yeah, I think so.
So he's only young. He's got a lot of time before he reaches what a lot of people say the prime, mid-30s. So he's got a hell of a lot of time. But obviously, in the UFC, he's been, he lost like two fights now. The last person was
Arlovska.
Andrei Arlovska, former UFC champion, absolute legend in the sport, a legend in the history of mixed martial arts in multiple different organizations. The guy's got a fan base around the world, and Tom Aspinall made a name from beating him. Then he's coming to this fight. He was supposed to fight the other Sergey, who sort of, I think he pulled out due to injury or COVID, one of them, either way. And this was a short notice fight, so props to the both of them, Tom and Sergey. For
it was meant to be fight, was it?
I know the both of them are called Sergey, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's name.
But Sergey Pilatov or something like that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but
yeah, well, he was supposed to fight the other one. Now, obviously, the other Sergey stepped up. Unfortunately, he lost. Now, what do you expect? Even Tom admitted himself, he didn't know what Sergey were going to bring. Again, he's a well-rounded mixed martial artist. Yeah. And Tom were basically saying how important it is to basically, like, watch out for Sergey's submissions, because they are the deadlies. He's a submission fighter, but he has got knockout power. And anyone who carries around more than 205, 210 pounds in weight have got knockout power. You could be the average guy, you could take a swing and you could knock someone out.
Yeah, I mean, Spivak was on a three-fight win streak going into this fight. He beat Carlos Felipe, Van der Aar, and Alexei Oleinik in the last fight.
Yeah, and there again, even the last two you just said are big names in, well, going up there with somewhat the big names in the heavyweight division. So when you're Tom Aspinall now, who's the top? Who's ranked 6 and 7?
Okay, so Aspinall, according to Ranking MMA, is just inside the top 15. There's a lot of fighters already tied up. You've got like Marcin Tybura, who's got Volkov. You've got Augusto Sakai, who's free. Then you've got everyone tied up then until Derek Lewis, number 4, Stipe, number 3.
Yeah, he's not going that far. Now he's good.
I think it'd be Sakai.
Yeah, either Sakai or probably someone behind him.
Or maybe someone like Ivanov.
Yeah, it could be that, or even if it's a last minute fight again, another 2 weeker. But hopefully not, and hopefully he can push it. But luckily enough, if they are all tied up, they've probably already made plans for him weeks ago. If he wins his fight, who he's fighting next? Mm-hmm. And again, is mixed martial arts in Europe is getting bigger. It's getting massive. In America, with the UFC being from America, being in America, it's a lot easier for them to promote over there. It's a lot easier for them to move from area to area. But when you come to Europe, everything's here, there, and everywhere. Okay, now I don't know why I struggle saying that. Then I'm not American. I can speak English. But yeah, everything's here, there, and everywhere. So when they're going to Spain, when they're coming to England, when they wanted to go to France and all this sort of stuff, it's somewhat hard for them because with the different time zones in America, don't wanting to get up or stay up at stupid times, and then people in England don't want to stay up till stupid times. My personal opinion, I don't give a fuck. I love UFC, so I'll watch it. But yeah, it's just all different. And again, it comes back to money as well. With Europe being somewhat the same size as America, they can somewhat go, right, how much are we going to make from this? Are we going to lose some? What fighters can we put on the cards? We can't put too big of a name fights on because we're going to have to pay X amount and we're only going to get Y amount. So they've got to put it as what they're going to do, what's better for business, what's also better for them. Mm-hmm. Somewhat fuck the fighters, but that's a different fucking video all to itself. But yeah, I want Tom to take his time, but the UFC are probably going to do to him what they do to everyone who gets a bit of heart behind them. And especially when they're English, they want to push them. Michael Bisping is a legend in England, and that's all they're looking for. They're looking for the next Michael Bisping. Mm-hmm. They've had stars in Michael Bisping, in Conor McGregor, who come from Europe. They just want more of them because they know that Europe produce good talent. It's just very far and few between, and there's that much talent in UK alone, in the UK scenes up north. There is that much talent that a hell of a lot of them won't even get looked at because they're all fighting each other at the minute to somewhat just get a glimpse, just reaching out just for that little bit of a hope to fight on a Cage Warriors or get called for Bellator or anything along the lines that could pluck them out from the thousands of fighters that all they know what to do is fight. Like, a lot of people think England, especially, they think London, they think, oh, they're all city folk and shit like that. They've all got their own shit sorted out. Everyone's got fucking money. They've all got the posh boy silver spoons coming out their arse. But it's not, definitely not like that. Especially up north, you've got fucking fighters and they breed the hardest of fighters. You go to any gyms up north, you've got Blackburn Predators, you've got Black Knights, you've got Manchester Predators, Combat Performance, you've got Reps MMA, you got Dragons Kickboxing, there's Rob's, you got Sinclair's, yeah. There's so many different gyms. Corbin, Next Gen, there's so many different gyms in the Northwest alone that they could fill a full roster of a fight league. And every single fight, I guarantee I'll put money on it now, every single fight will be a banger. They just need that air and that show time to actually get it. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Fighters like Tom Aspinall need to be left to do it their way, but then in a way need to be pushed because they need that next star.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let's get into this main event and... we can't have a perfect event, can we? We always have to have a kind of like a turn in the punch bowl. And yet again, Darren Till's wrestling lets him down, unfortunately. I mean, the heart behind this kid, it's very much justified. This guy should be, by all intents and purposes, should be a massive, massive star in the UFC. But he's got one flaw in his game, and it was fully exposed in this fight.
Yeah, you speak perfect Portuguese, and your Brazilian jiu-jitsu shit. What did you spend all that time in fucking Brazil? What did you do?
Well... there's a difference between learning Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and learning how to fight from your back and defend.
Yeah, definitely.
And unfortunately, Darren Till's wrestling is basic. So essentially...
it's a taekwondo guy.
Essentially on the ground, he was landing some big shots. Rocked Brunson a couple of times over the three rounds that this fight lasted. But whenever Derek Brunson was concerned or worried, he went for the takedown. And unfortunately, Darren had absolutely no answer in not only sprawling and defending the takedown, but stopping the takedown. And there was some really good analysis by DC just how well Brunson was with getting the takedown and then twisting. So he pulls Darren away from the cage. So he's essentially no way of getting back up to his feet. And Brunson can have his way with him on the ground. And that's what we saw, unfortunately. Whenever it went to ground, he looked like he was lost on the floor. Didn't know the correct movements to get back to his feet. Turtled up a hell of a lot. Took a lot of big shots and essentially tried to control the posture rather than get back to his feet and do what he does best, knocking people out. And unfortunately, this happened for three rounds. Two rounds in, me and Carlos were both getting very concerned that this fight was going to end the way it did. And unfortunately for Till, he wasn't able to have any answer whatsoever to that that quality wrestling from Derek Brunson. Eventually, he ends up giving the back up in the third round. And as soon as Brunson locks in that rear naked choke, Darren Till knew it was game over, tapped out. It's a shame as well because, like I said, he's got everything the UFC needs to make a big star, apart from he can't wrestle. And that's the struggle.
Especially against someone like Derek Brunson, his wrestling is up there with the likes of Emerson Hudo's and Daniel Cormier's.
Yeah.
And you don't go into one of them fights. And especially as a striker, when you strike, you leave yourself a lot of openings for a wrestler to take you down. Yeah. And a wrestler will find every single opening to take you down. Now, fair enough, you might not they might not get every single takedown. You might defend a couple, but guarantee, most majority of the time, they will get a takedown from switching it from a double to a single, to getting to your back, to giving you a bear hug, to dragging you down. They will do everything they can in their skill arsenal to get you down to that mat. And that's exactly what Till did. Now, don't get us wrong. We're English, and Till's English. We'll support any English fighter that fight. Even deep down, if I know that, hang on a minute, they're probably going to lose this fight, I'll still support them just because they're English. Call it patriotism. I suppose every country would do the same. I'd expect them to do the same. You back your own. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. But in this fight, I knew it was, if anything, it was one of Darren's hardest fights when it came into mixed martial arts, because the mixed actually just dominated this fight all the way through. He was coming in against an elite level wrestler, and the only thing he knew what to do was a Darren special and
try and punch his way out of trouble.
Yeah, do the gorilla and go forward. And unfortunately, the better man won. The better man definitely won. He were able to take Darren Till down, and Darren Till just played it safe. He wasn't pushing on the hips, he wasn't trying to move. Yeah, every now and again, he was trying to posture up, but yeah, you're going to take, especially that, let me just explain it. Especially in them sort of positions, you're going to take a crack. You have to use, when you're in full mount or side control or anything, if you can't get the foot on the hips, most majority of the down, one hand's coming down to push that leg down. As soon as that's happening, this part's open. I'm fucking taking cracks left, right and centre. So I need to be making that action fast and going back up. But Darren Till wasn't doing enough of that. And you can understand why. The power from Brunson, especially as an elite level wrestler, being able to drop bombs in that top pressure is just fucking phenomenal. But you think, I need to play this a bit more smarter. Darren Till did. He were able to defend that two takedowns in a row. But then when Brunson's corner shouted, basically switched it to the singles, perfect advice, he somewhat switched it, making Darren Till think, shit, he's switching it up here, what do I do? And again, he has got skills off his back. He knows how to do submissions. He knows how to grapple. But for some reason, over the last couple of years, even in the going back to the Woodley fight, when he lost via that arm triangle, weren't it, or something, it always seems his weakness, he's on the ground with submissions to someone who not only has got Tom Aspinall, who's one of his probably his main training partners, who's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's got all these coaches, and he's been in Brazil for X amount of years. And he just seems to, the only thing he knows how to do is somewhat play it safe when it comes to the ground. Either somewhat find that, wait for that point where he can get back up. Luckily enough, he found one, that were it, the one. And that's lucky against an elite level wrestler. Usually you get nothing. And then if not, the same thing that he did when he was refereeing the fight with Herb Dean.
Yeah.
Where he said to Herb Dean, is this not getting stood up because it's inactivity? It's like, the other day he had that side control. It's one of the most dominant positions you can be in. A lot of people think mount is, but side control and the half guard's actually a hell of a lot better. You're controlling the bottom and the top half of the body rather than just sitting on the hips. Yeah. In this sense, Derek Brunson just absolutely schooled Darren Till when it came to the mixed part of the martial arts.
And the issue is that this is Till's 23rd, I think, MMA fight, 11th in the UFC. He's had this issue since day one. Now, it seems to be that the kind of almost old school UFC style where you have one facet of MMA that you're good in, so you just stick to that and you don't learn anymore. But when you get to the top level, you struggle. And what you should do is be more proficient in those areas, knowing that you're good on your feet, knowing you're good at striking, train more in your wrestling, so at least you're a little bit competent in it. Till doesn't seem to, he seems to be worse at wrestling now than he was when he first went to UFC.
That's it. I believe if I was to put money on it, now again, I don't want to shit on Darren Till because decent guy, but I think the way he performed last night, the way he performed just fucking not long ago, Do you not think it somewhat looked like he worked a hell of a lot more in his stand-up than he did his wrestling? Because he was probably predicting that, I'm probably going to run through Brunson and straight away get the title shot against.
That's exactly what the plan is.
Because he knows Izzy's not going to take him down. He knows Izzy's just going to try and stand up and kickbox, because that's what Izzy does. And do you think that's somewhat come back and bit him on the arse?
Yeah, that's exactly what his plan was. His plan was, I'm not going to focus on wrestling because I intend to knock him out in the first round. Mm. And when that didn't happen, he attempted the same thing in the second round. And when that didn't happen, he had nothing. And Brunson had control on the floor. I mean, the guy had 76-1 shots whilst on the
floor. Not only that, even if it were to stay on the feet, Brunson were getting closer and closer with them shots, and he was doing well to somewhat. I wouldn't say dodge him because he didn't, but deflect the shots from Darren Till, because even though they looked like heavy shots that was hitting him, looks can be deceiving. When you're throwing back and throwing your shoulder up, you can somewhat get a graze in the glove, so it might look like it's hitting you. It's just some slight touching you, so you're not really feeling it.
And not only that, it was his lead eye that it was Till's lead eye that was damaged. So
and that was his more efficient eye.
Yeah. And then when he was throwing the big shots, he was off balance a lot. He was overreaching, and that gave Brunson the option to slip the shot and get the takedown. And he did that over and over again. And even when he was up, when Till was using his weight to kind of bully Brunson up against the cage, all Brunson did was slip down, get the double leg, and get Till away from the cage and onto the middle of the floor, where it was like a fish in a ball.
That's it.
Nothing he could do, flapping about.
Once you've got someone up against the octagon, and this is, again, up north, when Bisping were on about, we don't have a lot of... And I'm going to get something out here. I'm starting to get pissed off with Bisping. I respect him, but motherfucker's been living in California now for somewhat so long. He hasn't got a fucking clue. He hasn't got a clue. I love him, but he hasn't got a fucking clue. We haven't got any wrestlers. Yes, we fucking have. Just because it doesn't get shown, you go, Team Corbin have got brilliant wrestlers. You go down to Leon Edwards' gym down in Birmingham, fucking fantastic wrestlers. You go down to London Shoot Fighters in London, fantastic wrestlers. You go to Rob Sinclair's gym. Rob Sinclair, who should have been in the UFC, let's be real, if we want to talk about it, and we know why he didn't. But yeah, there is absolutely class wrestlers in the UK. It's just they need, again, going on to that exposure. That's what they just need. They need that exposure. They need more to show exactly what. Conor Hitchens, who at this point, I think he's going over to Germany at some point. People need to start getting behind him because he's a fucking all-round package. He's got personality, he's got charisma, and he's got fighting style. He'll finish a motherfucker on the floor and on the feet. He don't mind fighting in his own back garden and flying to Germany. Mm-hmm. This is the second time during COVID where he's gone to Germany to fight. It's people like him who need to be looked at, and people need to be signed. And yeah, we've got wrestlers in the UK, especially up north. We've got a hell of a lot of wrestlers. In Black Knights alone, we've got decent wrestlers. Sambo up here is looked at like, fair enough. Yeah, we might not do American wrestling.
Sambo wrestlers up in the Northwest.
Yeah, we might not do American wrestling, but when it comes to Sambo, a lot of people might not know it, but Khabib's wrestling, yeah, it's fucking massive in the Northwest of England. So yeah, I respect Bisping, but he's chatting shit when it comes about that.
And on that note, let's end the stream. Thank you all for watching along. We really do appreciate it. Carl's had a rough time with scheduling in terms of work and uni, so it's a very rare for him to be able to do this. But hopefully we'll be able to get that sorted soon and get back onto an even keel. But you can follow the rest of the networks and listen to their amazing content over on Chairshot, over on Visionaries Global Media, and over here on Radio Techers. Follow Carlos on Twitter at Kirby_Carlos. Follow me at Podfather Mags. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media. envisioning excellence on a global scale.